Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Finally, after years of debate, Massachusetts has a new education funding formula. Here's Governor Baker as he signed the Student Opportunities Act yesterday, which is the first major overhaul of school funding since 1993, and is expected to pump billions of dollars into the state's public schools.
Every kid in the Commonwealth of Mass, regardless of where they live, where they go to school, has the opportunity to get the education that they need to be great.
WBUR Edify reporter Max Larkin has been following this story, and he joins us now here in Studio 3. Welcome, Max.
Hi, Tiziana.
So what does the Student Opportunities Act do?
Yeah, it's funny, Tiziana. I got an email this morning saying, well, it would be really nice if you could explain what's in this bill. And I've been covering
it. Let's do
that. Yeah, I've been covering it for so long that I forget that people might not know. I think that's in part because this measure is a little bit hard to explain, but I'm going to give it a try. So you have 26 years ago, the state comes up with this formula that's supposed to calculate a kind of minimum that any school district should be spending based on the students that they teach on their schools. That's their so-called foundation budget. And based on how tax-rich that town might be, the state covers some part of that amount, could be 17% up to 82%. That formula never got updated in a comprehensive way. And so at a certain point, it was way behind where costs had gone. Healthcare and special education have outpaced what that minimum calculated. This bill makes that update, I should say this new law, and then most significantly, the law takes into account that funding should be much higher, as much as two times as high, for districts with the highest concentration of low-income students. So they could end up with thousands more dollars for each of those students. You think of, you know, cities like Springfield, Revere, Lynn. They've been really struggling to cover their bills. This bill aims to help them implement reforms that are costly but have been shown to work with those students, so extending the school day or adding support staff, social workers, that kind of thing.
Okay. Is there anything the law doesn't do?
Yeah. I think it's worth noting that it doesn't come with a whole bunch of regulatory teeth. The last time, 1993, there was an ed funding deal on this scale. Schools got a lot more money, but they also got the MCAS test, this mandatory high-stakes test, as a way to sort of monitor their progress. And then they also got competition in the form of public charter schools that would be angling for their students. This bill has a sort of softer approach to accountability, in part because its supporters were able to argue that the state already does a lot to keep schools honest. If it's struggling, they can close a school, take it over, lay off a whole bunch of teachers, that kind of thing.
All right. So we know that the $1.5 billion in new funding is really important. You've talked about the softer set of accountability. Are there other issues it's important to understand that the law addresses?
Yeah, it's not as if this is a blank check. There are some accountability measures in the bill. So, for instance, each district is going to have to submit a plan every 3 years to the State Department of Elementary and Secondary Education that explains what they're trying to accomplish, how they're spending the new money. The Commissioner of Education can review those plans, even force a redraft if he isn't satisfied with where they're at. And then this bill also sets up sort of a side pot of money where districts can apply for grants if they want to try something new. And there's also money set aside to sort of share those results. Finally, there's an interesting provision, kind of a small part of the bill, but it will allow the governor's education secretary to gather data on how the state's high school graduates are doing after they graduate. So how are they doing in college? How many credits are they taking? You know, how are they faring in the workforce? And that really hasn't been done before, and I think it could generate some pretty interesting data.
This has to essentially have been a triumph for state legislators after 26 years. What are they saying?
Yeah, there was some big old pat on the back at this ceremony yesterday. I mean, the thing sailed through after years and years of delay and perplexity, I think. There was not a single no vote against this bill, and that goes for across houses, across parties. Yeah, multiple votes. This thing was, you know, had the sanction of the entire body. But there was a debate beneath the surface about how to make sure that the new money that would be pumped into schools would be spent in an efficient way. And I don't think that part of the debate is going away. You heard Representative Alice Peisch from Wellesley at yesterday's ceremony kind of sound that note. She said, "Lots to celebrate here, but make no mistake, this is a beginning of a difficult period, and there's a hard part yet to come."
Accountability is not a dirty word. It is the mechanism by which we ensure that the funding we provide is spent in a way that benefits the students for whom it was intended.
So Alice Peisch will certainly have an ally on that score in Governor Baker. He's a big supporter of accountability. He threw all his weight behind the expansion of charter schools in 2016. That measure went down in defeat. And now it feels like he's got to have some leverage back so he can go to schools and say, "Hey, listen, I sent a bunch of money your way. Let's see some change."
So we got to ask, you know, people have been upset about the impact of the state funding formula for a long time. Yes, no votes against it this year, but 26 years. What took so long?
Yeah, I think that's a topic of some debate, too, Tiziana. It is a very complex formula, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. But I think it's worth remembering that a similar bill fell apart at the last minute in the summer of 2018. And a few things have happened since then. You had Senator Sonia Chang-Diaz give up her seat as co-chair of the state's Joint Education Committee. You had Jason Lewis, a senator from Winchester, came in. A new version of the bill, by the way, had Marty Walsh step in and support it. I think that's an important point. And then you had turnover in House leadership. For example, Jeff Sanchez, the former chair of the House Ways and Means Committee. Last fall, Sanchez was narrowly defeated in a primary by Nika Eligardo, who made this bill, and the fact that Sanchez seemingly didn't quite push it through last session, she made that a big part of her campaign. So I spoke to Sanchez. He kind of downplayed the idea that his primary defeat played a role in scaring legislators, maybe getting this bill through. He said lawmakers were working hard throughout, and they just happened to run out of time last session.
There was never the sense that it wasn't going to get done. The speaker always knew that it was going to get done. It was in the fine-tuning of the details. These formulas are really complicated. I mean, imagine they're taking into consideration, you know, area wages, property values, taxes, race, ethnicity. I mean, there's all these different pieces that go into it.
So that's the legislators. What about the state's education community? What do they have to say now that the bill's been signed?
Yeah, I think they feel especially jubilant when you – that's what you get from organizers with parents groups and teachers unions. But they are also adamant that they think advocacy, even some anger, played a big role here. I spoke to Charlotte Kelly. She's head of the Mass Education Justice Alliance, which was maybe the most prominent group in that Fund Our Future campaign. She thought this was less a matter of fine-tuning, getting to the right bill, and more a question of political will.
The legislature has known for 5 going on 6 years what the problem is. For us, the pushback that we were receiving from legislators from the beginning was, this is too much to pay for.
And yeah, Tiziana, like the predecessor bill in 1993, this bill does not come with a new source of revenue. Governor Baker has already started to argue that in implementing this ambitious new law between now and 2026, mind you, that should take precedence over any other big spending proposals.
Okay, you mentioned State Senator Sonia Chang-Diaz. We're going to speak with her in just a moment. She's advocated for this bill or similar bills for a number of years through her role as the co-chair of the state's Joint Education Committee, which up until this year she had that role. How does this bill include or expand on the work that she did?
Yeah, I think that's an important point. Because Sonia Chang-Diaz wasn't the co-chair when this went over the line, there's a risk that her role in pushing it over could be lost to history somehow. I think whatever your theory of why it passed this session, whether it's about the tweaks of the technical details or the political ambition or the tone in the state house, I think Sonia Chang-Diaz is the single most important person in a kind of cast of thousands in getting this thing passed, because it was her who pointed out with some urgency and over the course of several years now that districts like the ones we mentioned at the top of this segment, Brockton, Lynn, Revere, Worcester, they, you know, districts that might have a lot of immigrants but not much in the way of tax revenue, they were just struggling to pay their bills, let alone give their kids the resources they needed to help them thrive. And that vision made it into this final version of the bill and has now passed into law. So I'm very interested to hear what she has to say.
Okay, so stay with us for a minute, Max. State Senator Sonia Chang-Diaz does join us on the line now. Welcome, State Senator. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tiziana. Thanks for having me.
So now that the bill has become law, what's your reaction?
I'm thrilled. I'm pumped. I'm overcome. Representative Pleisch, Sherwin Pleisch, said yesterday, there's also a ton of work ahead for the state and for districts. So I'm excited and anxious about the work ahead. But, you know, just to pause and celebrate this moment, it is a, you know, generational level law that got signed into the books yesterday, and it has been the product of, as Max said, a cast of thousands who have been lifting the set of reforms up high for the last couple of years. So I am truly thrilled.
And it has been a cast of thousands, but you've been in the state Senate for a decade and have always had an eye toward education equity. You were a vocal advocate for school funding reform as co-chair of the Joint Committee on Education. This bill, the Student Opportunity Act, which is now law, does it achieve what you had hoped to achieve during the time you were pushing for a bill, for a law?
Absolutely, without question. You know, I look back at the a year ago, almost this past January, when a coalition of educators, Republicans, Democrats, community organizers, business leaders, you know, parents, students, you name it, came together to launch the Promise Act, which was a sort of, you know, precursor bill to this law. There were four or five key things that that coalition articulated that we wanted to see passed into law in 2019, and this bill checks all of those boxes. It includes all five of the recommendations of the Foundation Budget Review Commission from back in 2015, including and especially, as Max, to his great credit, has noted, the provisions for low-income equity, which was a huge sticking piece last year. And this bill really goes the full distance in following the research where it points us that we need to, in the case of our most impoverished districts, double the funding that we are committing to closing those opportunity and achievement gaps. So the law goes the distance there. It commits us to fully and accurately counting how many low-income students are even sitting in our schools, which seems like a simple thing, but is actually something we have been getting wrong for the last few years. It also recommits the state to fully funding our charter mitigation promise from a few years ago, which we've been falling down on. And it puts in place, you know, an equal system for how we're doing accountability across all districts, rather than having sort of different systems for different kinds of districts. So those were the criteria that we articulated, and I'm thrilled to say that it does all of that and more.
I want to jump in there. You mentioned last year a couple of times. It got close last year, but fell apart last minute. What got it over the finish line this year that is different from last year?
So I would say a few things. One, time really makes a difference, right? That this, as Max has seen up close and personal for the last several years, it is a complicated issue, and there are 200 members of the legislature, and not all of them live and breathe education policy every day. So just the having another year and a half worth of time for that organizing and educating work to take place, to continue to build the coalition so that more and more legislators were continuing to hear from their constituents about the things that they wanted to see in a bill, about the urgency with which their communities needed that. And that's why we had well over half of both the House and the Senate co-sponsoring the Promise Act early in the session. And that was a new threshold for us. And just the organizing outside of the building has been incredible to watch. You know, I chaired the Education Committee for 8 years, and constituency groups that normally, at best, don't get along with one another very well, were coming together in a unified way behind this bill. You know, folks, whether it's, you know, teachers' unions and charter school proponents, or business leaders and municipal officials, there was an incredible amount of unity that this was the number one thing that we needed to get done next in education policy, and that it needed to be something that was generational in size and not just nibbling around the edges.
All right. That is Massachusetts Senator Sonia Chang-Diaz. Thanks so much for joining us on Radio Boston.
Thanks again for having me, Tiziana, and thanks again to Max for his incredible coverage of this issue over the years.
WBUR's Max Larkin is still with us in the studio. Max, just quickly, what's your reaction to what we just heard from the state senator?
Well, when I was speaking to Jeff Sanchez, again, whatever your theory, he said this is a civics lesson. And I think it is that. Well, you know, this was something that people decided was worth doing, that needed to happen, had been put off for too long, and they were able to come together across a lot of lines and make it happen. So it's exciting to see what will happen next.
WBUR EDIFY reporter Max Larkin. Max, thanks.
Thank you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.